David Soselsky is a historian of some note in the state, a Craven County native who was taught at Duke University, UNC Chapel Hill, and ECU. He's the author or editor of several books examining the history of the eastern region of the state, including works on the 1898 Wilmington race riots and maritime culture during the slave era. He is someone well-versed in the history of this region, which made his initial discovery of the subject of his latest book quite a surprise.
I have really devoted my life as a historian to telling the stories of eastern North Carolina. And while doing research for other books, I kept coming across this mysterious figure, Abraham Galloway, who I had never heard of, going behind enemy lines to rescue his mother from slavery during the war, and you know, a dozen other stories that made him seem like this larger-than-life, very mysterious and very exciting individual, but I had no idea who he was.
Galloway may be known to some degree in the state as one of the first African Americans in the state legislature. He was one of three elected in 1868, serving a single term. But in Soselsky's opinion, and as laid out in his new book, The Fire of Freedom, Abraham Galloway and the Slave Civil War, Galloway was much more than just a political first in North Carolina history.
Only in time, as I did more and more research, did I come to understand that Galloway was really a national figure and probably the most important African-American figure in the American South during the Civil War. But that was actually late in my research as I followed him to sort of a now famous meeting with Abraham Lincoln and touring the North as a spokesman for African-American politics during the war.
Galloway went from slave to elected representative in a relatively short time, a slave in 1857, a state senator in 1868, made possible by the leap Galloway took when he made the decision to escape his servitude. David Soselsky reads from The Fire of Freedom.
In early 1857, young Abraham Galloway vowed to depart the world of his childhood. At 20 years old, he had lived by the banks of the Cape Fear River all his life and had never traveled more than a day's journey from his friends and family in Smithville and Wilmington. But that spring, he and a friend grew determined, they later explained, that liberty was worth dying for, and that it was their duty to strike for freedom, even if it should cost them their lives.
Galloway made the decision to leave despite having, for a slave, a relatively good life. A brick mason, he could choose his jobs as long as most of the money went to his owner, and this afforded him some bit of freedom that slaves working in a field did not enjoy. But still he left, perhaps a product of an oddity in the South at the time. His father was a white waterman, John Galloway, who, unlike most births involving free white men and enslaved black women, actually acknowledged his son with the slave Hester Hankins.
Said, "This is my son," and Abraham always said later that his father did everything he could to look after him. That had limits, of course, because he wasn't his owner, but all his life, Abraham Galloway spoke well of his father and acknowledged both sides of his heritage. And I do believe that later, as Abraham Galloway becomes such an important political figure, Abraham always went out of his way to bring together blacks and whites in political coalitions. And I think that was partly because of his family roots.
John Galloway was known as charismatic, courageous, and quick-tempered, which were probably descriptors also used to describe his son Abraham, who, after escaping from the South, returned to the South to work as a spy for the Union Army as he joined the fight against the Confederacy. But Soselsky says as fervently as Galloway fought to destroy the Confederacy, he often fought the Union Army for its treatment of slaves it encountered as it moved through the South.
And the second thing that Galloway saw down in Mississippi was the Union Army promised somewhere between 1,000 and 1,200 slaves their freedom if they would help dig a vitally important canal to go around Vicksburg. That did not work, like from an engineering point of view, and the Union Army retreated. And when they retreated, they left those slaves there. So you can imagine their fate. You can imagine how slaveholders in Mississippi would treat those African-American men and women. These were not things that a man like Abraham Galloway would quickly forgive or forget, and he didn't.
What Abraham Galloway experienced is also telling of the slave population of the time. The typical discussion of the Civil War centers around momentous battles between North and South, but David Soselsky says lost in the retelling of the war is another side, with Abraham Galloway as one of its leaders that attempted to exert its influence on the outcome.
As I did the research for the book, I really began to see there's the North and the South, the Union and the Confederacy, but then there's them. and I really began to see the African Americans of the South as a third force, always determined to destroy the Confederacy, but also wary of the Union in many ways, and with their own agenda oriented towards slave liberation.
It was perhaps what Galloway saw in the service of the Union that brought him to an interesting insight on how liberation may be found. It was to be found, not necessarily through social equality, but with access to the ballot box. David Soselsky reads from The Fire of Freedom about an address Galloway gives in 1864 at what is now St. Peter AME Zion Church in New Bern.
At Andrew Chapel, he made clear that he understood that his audience yearned for more than voting rights. He realized that those gathered there still felt the stings of 100 daily reminders of their oppression. Local customs decreed, among much else, that black men and women stepped aside for all white pedestrians, waited in line behind all white customers at stores, sat on the exposed lower decks of steamships, and never shared a dining room with whites. Galloway understood all too well how much the former slaves resented these enduring signs of racial prejudice and hostility. His revolutionary agenda included pushing aside those relics of slavery, but he insisted that they first and foremost stay fixed on voting rights. As for social equality and racial segregation, Galloway told the church that he was willing, and this is a quote, to wait a little longer. But as the Anglo-African's local correspondent quoted him, he wanted his political rights now. Though I should say, of course, that Galloway was notorious for not giving ground on sidewalks, for not conceding any indignity, but when it came to his political thinking, this was one of the most striking times where we see Galloway looking beyond the current moment to that distant future and saying, okay, we can accept some indignities now in exchange for this future vision of equality and political rights. And that was not at all a universal opinion among African American leaders in the South or North at that time. But for Galloway, it was, if we can vote, everything else will follow.
The ballot box got Galloway into the state Senate in 1868, but in terms of everything else will follow, Galloway did not live long enough to shepherd that forward. He died suddenly in 1870 at the age of 33, a time when some of what blacks had won at the ballot box started to retrench and soon gave way to Jim Crow in the South. When Galloway died, it was reported that his funeral was the largest the state had seen up to that time. But soon Galloway was an ignored figure in state history, washed out by an historical narrative that Galloway's radical abolitionism did not fit neatly into.
He was a brilliant individual who really, I really consider one of the most important African-American figures in American history. But for 125 years, I'm sure that no school child ever uttered his name. Immediately after the war, of course, he wasn't forgotten, but in coming years, the South and the North, to some degree, created this almost mythical image of the Civil War. I guess we could call it sort of the Gone with the Wind version. And let's face it, it's hard to imagine Abraham Galloway, who wore two pistols at his hip, punched out Union naval officers, went behind enemy lines to rescue his mother, and would stop at nothing in the struggle for freedom. It's hard to imagine Abraham Galloway in Gone with the Wind.
David Soselsky is the author of The Fire of Freedom, Abraham Galloway and the Slave Civil War, published by UNC Press. I'm George Olson.